go. I'm not sure I'd say what's like really inspiring to the different things. I don't see most reasonably good movies that come out. I mean, Toy Story 2 is wonderful. You know, I really enjoyed that. I just seeing it recently.
The Matrix, you like
yeah,
that?
Matrix was wonderful.
Got the look.
Yeah. And all of the, all the great sci-fi, action movies and everything were, I'm not too big into deep-meaning movies. I go to movies for entertainment, and a lot of that basically plays out in our games also. We are kind of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie of
computer games.
Yeah.
Why do you think people like Quake 3?
Well,
or Quake, I mean, sorry, Quake.
Specifically, what we set out to do with Quake 3 was just a completely eyes wide open focus on the game just being fun while you're playing it. And there's no sense of hubris about the grand design or anything about it, or trying to impose a story or a tale on top of all of this. It's looking at a game in its fundamental sense of what you're doing has to be fun. And it's not a matter of beating the game into submission or accomplishing something. The actions have to be fun. It has to be something that you want to just go out and do. It's people don't play softball or something because they want to beat the game of softball. It has to be an action that's fun by itself.
Yeah,
and I think that we succeeded in a lot of ways on there. And we expected and did receive a bunch of pushback from the the incestuous core of our fan base on there, where there certainly are people that want more and more complexity and sophistication and things, and that is a viable direction to go for games, but it does lead towards a stagnant core on there, and you get what you have in the flight simulators, where you have games that require you to read this giant manual before you can get in and have fun. There have been flight simulators which are, you just jump in, fly around, and shoot things, and those are fun and interesting. Then there are these serious simulators, which you have to convince yourself you're being entertained by these. And, that level of barrier to entry on that, it's possible to do a first-person shooter like that, where, it requires so much knowledge about what's going on, how things are supposed to work, the strategies of all of these things, that it's just not fun to sit down and play. And there would be probably a couple hundred thousand people that would like that, but I wouldn't actually be one of them. I don't have the time to sit down. I never got into any of the complex mods that would require a whole bunch of simple stuff. I still like playing just a simple, fast game where you jump in and have a good time. And I think there's five times as many people, in the game buying world that also feel that way. But those 200,000 people that want the extremely sophisticated, complex games, they've got my email address and they make themselves known. We set out expecting that. And
yeah. So what was the last non-id game then that you spent more than 2 hours playing?
Probably F-Zero X on the Nintendo 64.
I don't know that one.
It's a racing game.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cars.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of making a driving?
Yeah, we talked about it right after Wolfenstein. I was working with some voxel landfill technology, and we did a really brief demo of a little car driving thing. But we've never taken anything close enough to proof of concept. But if we did do something, it would almost certainly be in the fun genre, like the F-Zero games, rather than the really serious driving simulations. And again, there's many valid paths to games, but I have my personal biases, and they happen to be broadly held enough that we can do successful games and still be doing the things that I consider games that are entertaining for me.
So you would describe your personal biases as not necessarily so much driving, but more about rocket launchers or something, then, or
just having. I mean, the games are for fun, and simulation games have never been that big for me, as far as the flight simulators, the driving simulators, and all of that. I mean, I recognize in some aspects the element of entertaining there, and it's certainly not like I'm saying these are no fun, nobody can enjoy these, but it's just they haven't been my personal favorites. I mean, early on, I loved the RPG games, but, as my life got busier and busier with other stuff, and I didn't have that much time to spend on those, I got out of those, but I've always loved the simple, straightforward arcade games, and, while they've changed a lot in going from Gauntlet to Quake Quake 3, they're still the same kind of fundamental things, you know. You run around, you fight your enemies, you pick up stuff, you make it to the next level, and I think it's a fundamentally valid, core primal gameplay element there. And, I don't feel bad about, even making relatively similar games, like Quake 2, Quake 3, on the different styles of things. There have always been driving games and flying games, there's always going to be action first-person shooters now, and I think we've made good steps in each of our projects. We probably are going to be going a different way with our next game, because there's, not everyone at the company does kind of feel the same way I do about that, so we're likely going to be doing something a bit different next time, but we haven't exactly settled on it yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can reconvene when that comes about.
Going and expanding on that, have you decided if it's going to still be a first-person game, or might you kind of go into
it's very likely to still be a first-person game, but it may not be an action game.
Okay, so maybe...
Graham and I have been talking, sitting around talking about game design ideas for different things, and they cover a pretty fair range, and exploring, a few different choices that we've got, but we're not prepared to actually talk about them yet.
Okay, so... all I was just asking because
they are likely to be first person, almost certainly.
Because I've been thinking about it, and it'd be interesting if maybe it would go into maybe like RTS or something else, but like the same way that Blizzard kind of went from.
Ultimately, they're gonna try to focus on stuff that they really want to like. It's the game that the team internally we enjoy playing, and whatever the next game, it seems like from their personality and just from previous experience that they're really not going to deviate anything other than this is what we really want to do. And so
I'm not a real good real time strategy. I actually have never really sat down and played much of one. Just not my type of thing. It's just a whole difference of, the first-person games are the most immersive kinds. Real-time strategy games are among the least immersive. You were directing your forces, and it's clearly not you in the game. I think it's very likely that we'll be doing something that's still first-person. It's a small step to third-person, but I actually think there's probably other companies that are better suited to do third-person, companies that have more kind of directorial ambitions, and unlike many people in the games industry, I have absolutely zero desire to be making movies on the computer, and that's the downfall of a lot of companies. A lot of game designers wish they were directors, and you can make up your mind, and I'm clearly in the game designer part rather than the director part, and that's also the draw that puts a lot of people towards third-person games, but third-person is definitely better for showing off things like character animation on while Steve would definitely love to go to something that was much more animation focused, that's probably not going to be the next step. That's not completely out of the question, but I would probably bet on saying something for first person.
So it's interesting that you say, movies on the computer are kind of downfall or whatever, because a lot of the 3D card companies like 3D FX and NVIDIA have actually used that as their mantra, like putting Hollywood on the desktop. I've actually heard that.
There are interesting aspects to that in that one thing that the amount of labor required to do the highest quality utilization of the 3D engine that we can do now is very quickly approaching what you need in Hollywood set design, where right now, Quake 3 wasn't really even close to pushing the limits of what we would do for trying to do lush visuals on things. We had to maintain this fast speed throughout the whole thing. We had to maintain these gameplay type things. But if somebody took basically this year's level of technology, this Christmas products, and said, I want to do the most visually stunning thing that's going to be the closest to movie set type things, it's possible to do that right now beyond a level which people have really seen. But the technology is there, and I've been aware of where it's going for the past year or so on there. Specifically some things with full texturing of the levels where just set designers have to go in and like kind of airbrush like all of their sets in the different ways and like build all these things up with models. That level of effort can now be spent in computer games. It didn't used to be. In like the days of Doom and Quake, you know, you didn't have the ability to put that much labor into it. If you've got a room in a hallway and another room, you know, like hallway, block, ceiling, you know, and that's it. That's all the possibility you have to do. So there's limits to how much work can be done there. But now if you've got 10,000 triangles to spend on the hallway, and, you know, you've got 16 megs of textures to wrap over everything, look at that and say, well, you know, say it takes this long to, you know, for every 100 polygons that are put into the world, and this long for every megabyte of texture, and you start multiplying all that out, and yeah, you look at it and say, okay, to fill a DVD ROM full of like the luscious possible 3D content, you need something that looks like a movie crew, you know, with potentially hundreds of specialized people. And that's not like a company, there's issues with that, because that's not like it's the type of company that I'm really interested in having, where, you know, Hollywood works with the big studio systems where you've got lots of people that come in and fill the different parts and all that, and that may be where the game industry heads. I mean, certainly there are large teams, for especially some of the big console games where, you know,
Final Fantasy,
Japan, where they put just incredible numbers of people on them, but that's not at all like what a small game development team has been like in the PC space, where you really want your ideal company is like you and half dozen to a dozen of your friends that are working on a project you really enjoy and are going to have something that you're going to be proud of at the end. So there are game design trade-offs that need to be made on whether you want to try and compete on raw media, and that's the real danger of having somebody that is like a game designer or a game creator that's not really in tune with the other issues of what the technology and the labor can do, because it's so easy to like take your pad of paper and write down, this is my game design, it's going to be a sprawling world of, you know, 30 acres of all this stuff, and it's going to have levels up above and below, and we're going to have all this stuff. But then when you start saying, it's like, well, okay, we could make really rough cuts of all of this, and get it done in a reasonable time, but we've got the ability, like, if we're looking a year or two in the future, like, every model can be 20,000 polygons, and, all of these worlds can be uniquely textured, and if we want to take advantage of this, then it can take this massive number of people, and, I mean, Hollywood does manage to do it. I mean, they've got much, much better management skills than any kind of game company in the computer industry. But I would be kind of sad if things wound up going that way, where the only way to do a competitive product would be to have a studio full of people, because there is something really neat about doing things with a small cadre of people. It's good to be aware of all of the issues, and I mean, I can calmly look at all the trends, technical, labor, and creative-wise, and all this, and, you know, I can think to myself, well, it'd be kind of unfortunate if something goes this way, but I'm not going to stick my head in the sand and pretend that it's not going to. I may be able to avoid being there by making different decisions on the technology or the game design aspect of things, and that's probably what I would do, rather than if things get to the point of needing, you know, 100 people to make a computer game, I would probably create a different style of games that doesn't require to be competed head-on that.
So you're always going to be in favor of something that, you know, creating games with smaller teams of people, maybe so that keeps the door open for, you know, the kid in his garage with, you know, his friends down the street.
There's also... It's not like we've tapped out all possible gaming genres, but there are really... There's some tough things in the... I mean, a lot of people do complain about the industry in various ways, and there is some real... There's some truth to the fact that, like, the publishers don't want to publish a new idea. Chris Hecker from Definition 6, he's one of the guys pushing physics in a lot of ways and all that, and does a lot of the GDC stuff, but he's had this this little game demo that he's been working on that's a novel idea, and it's using physics as the core thing, but it's not like, let's pack physics into a first-person shooter or something. It's a completely different game that's actually a good game design to tie in with the physics, but the publishers just aren't interested, on that. And that's too bad, but on the other hand, there's some positive signs from some other things, like I know this guy that's doing simple little games, selling them over the internet, and making a lot of money, like a couple hundred thousand dollars a year on download stuff.
What's his name?
Seamus. Get trademarks and other stuff. I don't know if he wants. I've asked him if I could say how much he's making in an anonymous sense, but I don't know.
It's possible if you guys could send it for a fact check to make sure.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I prefer it just we leave that as an anonymous person.
Or just to make sure, if you guys send it to the review. That way, because we're openly just talking about things.
That's right.
But I'm heartened about that because it is neat to see that there are some people that can actually be not just scraping by, but making good money by doing games that are outside the mainstream, and that's possible because of the internet. And it's like we were successful in shareware early on, to the tune of with the original King trilogy, we were making $100,000-$150,000 a year on that, and with the second trilogy, we were up to making about $500,000 a year from shareware. And that was before we had any commercial boxes, and it looks like it's possible to do even better than that nowadays. So that's kind of cool. But the mainstream, boxes on the shelves, buying your end caps and shelf space stuff, there's not a lot of desire from the publishers to do, to do interesting new things. But I'm sure there are new genres that are, that are ready to pop up, but there's some resistance to that.
Have you taken a look at Halo? Are you interested in Halo at all? There's a lot of...
I've watched the movies and stuff of it. It looks pretty good. The one problem right now is that there's no way to really judge anything from screenshots and stuff right now, because any given halfway competent rendering engine can render any given scene, and it's only in how things tie together that there's any differentiation. But certainly the Bungie people, they've got a lot of talent in a lot of ways, and they've been doing this basically as long as we have. They were kind of, in Max Shadow for many years, but now they've gone ahead and had some mainstream PC success there pretty well.
Going back to this sort of new, creating new genres and stuff, and the resistance from the publishers, is that something you'd be interested in promoting to help get, new genres out there? Like maybe supplying, money to publish these games?
Well, I'm positively not interested in being a publisher. That was like a multi-year argument I did over, if you think back 5 years ago, it's like all the game developers, wanted to break in and become publishers because there were lots of the little teams. This was before everything consolidated down to the few major ones. And we argued over that for a long time, and we self-published the original Quake shareware stuff, and we actually... When all was said and done, we probably lost money on it because of colossally bad business management in different aspects of that. But finally, everyone agreed, especially as we see the publishers consolidating and all that stuff coming down, that it is much better to be a developer than a publisher, because being a software developer is just a clean part of the industry. You hand off your CD and you get your checks in the mail, while being a publisher, it just takes you into all these messy parts of the business that you really don't want to be. Just getting people to pay you after they've taken and sold your product. It's just, I don't want any part of that type of that side of the business.
What about even using your influence to say, to some publisher, hey, maybe you should give this a chance, as a professional artist?
I mean, from my experience, when you start becoming what John doesn't want to become, that is, management and trying to push things that take away from what he really, his talent, which is programming.
I can toss an offhanded comment about something like that, but I try not to undertake things that I know that I won't have the time and energy to be able to vote to do something well on there. And in fact, that's very key to a lot of my focus in a lot of ways. I'm willing to just ignore a whole lot of things, and that's pretty important, because so many things come in that are potential demands on my time, and it's just easy to see how people that are in a similar situation wind up, just getting their entire day spoken for and not being able to do any work, because every day there's phone calls and emails from people that want to do something. They want to have an interview or pitch a business proposal.
When I was at it, the amount of can I have an interview with John? Can I have an interview with John? Did John visit us? Can we do this? We're the biggest fan. I mean, and if we were just to say yes to those alone, John's time would not be enough to take care of all of those requests. I mean, just that alone.
Mm-hmm. But there's even stuff that, you know, that I want to be doing that I, like, I do value my communications with all the hardware vendors and stuff. You know, like, I'm out here talking with Apple, and I spend some time with 3DFX and other stuff. And I go and do a circuit with a lot of that stuff. Because, you know, I do feel some degree of responsibility for hoping to, you know, to try and guide some things in a good direction. Because I've got a sense of perspective that a lot of individual companies don't have. But even there, I wind up feeling guilty that I'm not doing more. Because especially this coming year where there's going to be a lot of divergent hardware designs and there's, you know, there's not a clear direction of where everybody thinks things should be going. And it's like I'm telling myself that I should be out there, you know, like, evangelizing things and trying to bring a consensus. And I, because I am in a fairly good position to do that type of stuff. I mean, Microsoft listens to me on a lot of stuff. I mean, I just, and certainly all the hardware companies do. And there's a good general level of respect on all that. But, like, certainly during the development of Quake 3, the time just wasn't there. I was just, you know, I couldn't go do it. And now I'm running around, you know, trying to go hit a bunch of things. But I know that even now I'm not going to be able to, like, really follow through, because it would practically be a full-time job to just try and do that, to try and, like, shepherd some of the things in the industry in a direction that I want it to go. And like, I don't think things are, you know, I don't have the hubris to think that the world's going to go to hell if I don't help it. So, I mean, I can look at that and say, it's like, things will probably, I'll do my best to help in a little way and, you know, and try and help out, but I'm not going to be able to, like, give it the full attention. And it'd be things like, you know, helping other game genres and designs. I'm afraid it would be this, you know, this kind of casual thing where I put in some good word for something, and then, you know, I don't have the time to follow through and push it down and all that.
Man.
Yeah.
So, switching gears a bit, I was reading some stuff about how, like, you know, now that Quake 3 is put to bed, that you're going to spend a little more time doing more research on, you know, on engines and whatever.
Yeah, I've got a couple engine things that I'm working on.
And
research.
So is one of those things Trinity? I think I've had a little bit of confusion
whole, yeah,
about Trinity.
I was never really certain how this got as confusing as it did to everybody. because, I mean, after Quake, just the stuff that I was, when I was starting to work on new rendering technologies and everything, everybody was calling it, you know, like, the next engine or whatever. Mike Labor has to suggest that we just take, you know, like, Intel's tack of name the next project about a river near you, and, you know, we have the Trinity River in Dallas, and so it's just like Trinity Engine, the next stuff. And of course, we wound up not rolling that into a project because Quake 2 was derivative of Quake 1, and I wound up, like, stopping that to work on Quake 2. So there was never a, like, you know, like, a specific project that was on. That was just, like, when we were talking about the work that I was doing, and I, you know, and then at the start of Quake 3, I went and did, like, 6 different research engines for different rendering techniques and everything. But it's still just, this is the research work that I'm doing. You know, it's like 2 voxel things, a space warping thing, you know, a lumagraph thing, and then, you know, some of the stuff that actually turned into the Quake 3 engine and some other stuff like that. But that's one thing that's been one of the real strengths of, you know, of ID and, like, my technical directions in particular is you see companies that are wed to a clever idea, you know, and there's some specific ones that you can probably name where they have their idea and that's what everything's wrapped around, and I'm not tied to any of the particular ideas. And like I said, when I did at the start of Quake 3, I had like 6 different things to go on, and I looked at all of them and said, these are like more intellectually neat, but like what we're doing for Quake 3 actually turned out to be kind of a wider path in many ways. And I've got, you know, a couple things that I'm going on right now. But there's no one that's, like, got some magic tag on it. They're just all the different things that I'm going to be examining.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned voxels, and you're doing some research on that. Like, what do you think of... do you think 3D hardware companies should be looking at maybe voxel acceleration? And what do you think of the voxel things that have come out, like Delta Force?
The voxel stuff in software, I mean, I've written a few voxel engines at one point. Actually, it was the early version of Shadowcaster. Raven's Origin title actually had like voxel floors in it one time, but we wound up like taking that out when I rewrote the stuff to be more polygon based. There are some real advantages to voxel representation of things, especially when it's in like a sparse octree form, because it gets you complete texturing and detailed geometry in a lot of ways. But I did these two voxel engines at the beginning of Quake 3, and it got to the point where I thought that I could almost make them run in software but it would be at a fairly low resolution, and just compared to what you could do at that speed, you know, with hardware polygons, it doesn't pay off in that case. But I did do an analysis of, like, what the memory access patterns would be and everything, and in the hardware, like, you could do a voxel ray tracer in hardware with drastically less hardware than what we're actually using right now for all the triangle rasterizers, and I think it could be a much more compelling visual representation in a lot of cases, but it's going to be really difficult to see. I almost hesitate to tell people to pursue something like that, because I know that I did some walk-around demos and everything, but it's... The reason the PC industry is as good as it is right now in hardware is because we all had an example of SGI to look up to. We had working existence proofs of this clearly works, look, they've done it, and then it's just a matter of like matching and then exceeding their performance. While to recommend something completely different, like saying, you should go, you know, have your fab make you a voxel chip, you know, you should just go try this, you know, spend millions of dollars on this or whatever, I'm really hesitant to do that because we don't have a complete existence proof that says this is a necessary and sufficient rendering primitive to do like a complete engine or something with. Now, if somebody did do a voxel caster there, you could go ahead and get the depth values with it and intermix it with current triangle stuff, and that would be like an interesting intermediate step that I honestly don't think would take that much time, that much hardware. And someone in this, right now, this kind of chaos and everybody's crazily trying to diversify their products, maybe someone will try something like that just kind of on Mark because they're just fumbling around for something to do. And I think there's some potential good things there, but I can't conclusively say this is like the future direction, because while it works really well for environments and there's some great stuff you can do with that, it's less clear how well it works for characters, and you wind up saying, well, maybe you have to build them in a deformation matrix around them, and then when you ray cast into it, bend the rays as it hits the deformation lattice. But, like, I haven't written a software version of that, and I'd be hesitant to tell someone, you know, this is clearly a good idea until I could show them, like, here's a simulation showing this. Look, it works. It looks more impressive than anything you can do directly like this. And that's not on my schedule right now to spend the time to do, because I've got a couple of things that are immediately pressing in terms of research. I do think that there is at least some significant potential for that being an interesting direction. Now, the thing that I actually want to play down on everyone is higher-order surface rendering, like curves and nerves and subdivision surfaces and all this stuff, which everyone's all crazy about now, but after working with them for 2 years, they're not all they're cracked up to be. There's, like, all these issues with, you don't see them from the outside, and this is, like, the thing about being in the trenches as a developer. If you just, read the research papers and you understand all the stuff and how, like, SGI patches and all this stuff works, you think, wow, this is neat. This is just the next step up from triangle primitives and everything. And you don't recognize, like, all of these in-practice problems, like, with invalid normals that degenerate edges, how the fact that you can't do an arbitrary cut of a patch without raising it to, like, the square of the order of the sides. You can't stitch T-junctions by fixing the other things. There's, like, all of these little things that actually wind up being a fairly significant pain in the ass in the different cases that you're just not aware of from this, like, bird's eye view of it. And there may very well be all those issues with voxels, too, which is why, again, why I'm hesitant to just get up on a pulpit and say, this is the future, because a lot of things look great from the outside and aren't necessarily so great when you get down to it.
Okay, so since you're going back to your research and stuff, so this is going to be, it's sort of like a fairly... Going back to the research you're doing, is this going to have an effect on when the next big game might come out?
It depends. It depends on like what we wind up choosing for the next stuff. Because some of the technologies, both of the technologies that I'm working on are stuff that can fit fairly well into the existing Quake 3 framework. So there is a possibility that new technologies wind up going into the next product. But that's sort of going against the fact we have this wonderful opportunity where we've got this rock-solid, stable, expandable, flexible engine where we could do a game design and not touch the engine, and that would be really nice from a management standpoint. But then if we do that, then we're looking at the stuff that I'm doing today probably wouldn't see store shelves for like 3-4 years or something, and that's just like a long time for something to go. So there is going to be a really strong incentive to maybe push some of the technology into the next product.
Do you do much research by playing other games, looking at competitive products?
I played Unreal most of the way through. I'll probably play Unreal Tournament most of the way through, although I haven't yet. I'm excited for some of the demo stuff. I don't do a really thorough canvassing of, I play everything that's out there. Usually I watch over someone's shoulder when they're playing the hot new game or whatever on there, but I don't spend that much time actually playing other games. I certainly play more, Quake 3 than any of the other games out there.
Do you have someone in the company that does do that?
Christian and Graham play most of the new games. It used to be Brandon played like every game when he was in it at the time. So it's just like every game would funnel through them.
Usually it seems to be Christian Graham and Tim.
Tim does it more for some kind of like research purposes. Tim's fairly conscientious about looking through the other stuff. But Graham and Christian and Graham actually play for fun more than other games.
Can you enumerate the top 6 items on your research to do?
The two rendering engine things that I'm working on specifically now are better lighting model stuff, where some of the interesting issues with lighting are Quake 2 added radiosity lighting to the calculations, where you would get realistic bouncing of light on there, but a lot of people actually didn't like that because it took away from some of the harder shadows, where it kind of murked out more things, even if it was in a more realistic way, and a lot of people liked the stronger shadows. In Quake 3, we went back to just a direct cast light, at least partially because I didn't want to do the finite element radiosity on the curve patches, but some of the stuff that I'm working on right now is...